What's up, Noel Nation? It's Jesse from Plant the Spear, and today we're talking baseball. And man, I am excited for this season coming up. Link has this program rolling. And as much as I love baseball, man, I had to call in the big guns to come and help me out to preview this team. And so I am honored and excited to have my friend Gary Davis, a member of the Animals of Section B, the guy who probably knows this baseball team as good as anybody not named Link Jarrett, to come help us preview this team tonight. So, man, super appreciative and excited to have you here, Gary. First off, man, how are you? And I'm appreciative of you being here. And just where's your excitement for this upcoming season as we are now less than 2 weeks away from opening day?
Yeah, it's fast approaching, and it can't get here fast enough for all of us, to be honest with you. But I appreciate you having me on. Way bigger of an intro than I probably deserve, but I'll take it. No, super excited about the season to get started. And you know, I could talk about this till I'm blue in the face. You know, like I say, till we get started and that first pitch happens. But you know, in our household, opening day is a holiday. Typically it will go, the last 2 years I've made TikTok videos of going to pick the kids up from school early. And I think both times those videos have gotten over like 6,000 views just because we put hashtag opening day and posted out there, and it seems to go kind of wild. Super fun story about the first one we ever did. The very first year that Cal Fisher was here, his parents said that they were super worried about, you know, him coming down here, that, you know, they felt really good about the program, felt really good about Link. You know, Cal was originally committed to Link up at Notre Dame, and when he decided to follow Link to Florida State, they're like, man, it's a long way away from Wisconsin. And, you know, they didn't really know how they felt about it. And they said opening day, they actually saw that video, and they came up to me and they were like, I just want you to know, after we saw that video, we knew that it was this family oriented. We knew he was in the right place. And I was like, oh, man, that's pretty big words coming from a player's parents like that. I'll take it. So.
Yeah, get this man on the recruiting staff, right?
Hey, look, there's we met a young man after our UAB game that plays down in South Florida, and we spent a couple hours talking to him and his parents, selling them on Florida State, and he's going to be a stud. He's a junior in high school this year, so we're definitely keeping eyes on that kid down south. So, and they're great people. So, which plays right into why I'm so invested in this program and Link and the players here, because he doesn't just get great baseball players, he gets great human beings. And that means just as much to me as watching great baseball as my kids being able to interact with really good people. And you know, we get real close with these players and with their families, and you know, from tailgates to dinners and soul calls in the evening, talking to their parents and stuff, you know, just let them know that we got their kids while they're here. You know, we take good care of them.
Yeah, and I love to hear that, man, because really I think that's one of the foundational building blocks of why Link's having the success that he has, because it's just a family atmosphere. And, I mean, of course, you got the accolades, the winning, the draft picks and all that stuff, which we're going to get into, but it's just a family atmosphere. And, of course, you know, towards the end of the show, we're going to talk about the signing day that they had with your son, Aaron. And it just goes to show, man, that the heart of the heart that's in the program, should I say, rather than the heart of the program. There's a heart in the program. And it's just, it's hard not to cheer for this baseball team when you see not only are they doing it, they're doing it the right way, and they're having success by doing that. So, I mean, let's just talk about, right? We'll start with some of the build up to this season. You made a run to Omaha in year two under Link after you had that first kind of figuring things out year where you knew you had to get some talent here. Last year, you're basically one win away from Omaha. And, you know, maybe if you didn't have some pitching injuries and have to go all the way across the country, you're probably in Omaha again. So the success and the winning is coming. They've produced 19 draft picks in the past two seasons. So it's easy to see that Link has this thing rolling in the right direction. The way they develop players, I trust the staff to whoever they bring in to turn into a high-level player. And so, not only do you have the family aspect, the winning is there, and the production is there, and the draft pipeline is there, and all that helps with recruiting as well. And, you know, it's crazy when I was prepping for the show, I was listening to a lot of Link's interviews, and his attention to detail is just unbelievable. I mean, it is absolutely second to none, to where, I mean, every micrometer in the game of baseball matters to him. And, you know, he talked a lot about the facility upgrades with the launch pad, the facility upgrades with the pitching lab, how that's just going to even further that development. And so knowing that in the short amount of time he's been here, the success they've been able to achieve, the things, the investments that they're making into the program, the talent that they're able to acquire, I mean, you can see the trajectory of this program just continuing to hopefully someday getting finally bringing the hardware home.
Yeah, the you know, we're pretty blessed to play in what I consider, you know, I haven't gotten to travel all over the country and go to a bunch of different places. You know, our stadium's been there for a long time. You know, but we're blessed to play in one heck of a venue. And the things that have been done there, whether it was under 11 or under Link, the things that are happening now, you know, to continue to create that atmosphere that resembles big league play. You know, like you talked about the, you know, the all new, the batting cage and everything else that we've got going on, or the launch system for the pitchers and so on and so forth. I mean, the money that's being invested in this, it feels like it's something we can see in real time paying off, which, you know, I'm not going to shift gears and talk about any other sport, but you see a lot of money being built, spent right next door, and you feel like, all right, that's going to have to cultivate something. Something's going to come out of that. But like, we're already seeing things happen before we get all these new things. So now that we got all these new things with all these great players and the way things were already going, you know, you can't help but be so excited about where this is going to go. And, you know, you got guys, they've always come back, right? You know, Taylor Walls, Cam Smith, James Tibbs, those guys, Alex Lodies, you know, players have always come back to Florida State in their offseason to train and do things. Now you're going to have those players coming back even more. And, you know, when they get around our guys that are here, they start developing those pro habits because they're practicing with those guys and blending with those guys. And obviously when you bring in a recruit, you know, and just figure like, oh yeah, you know, we're going to go out here and we're going to go check this out. And oh yeah, that's Cal Raleigh is out there, you know, catching for our pitchers right now. You know, yeah. Come on, man. Like how do you say no to that? You know what I mean? Like this is the atmosphere I get to be in, the environment I get to be in. And then the first time that, whether they're there as a recruit or whatever, the first time they experience a big game at Hauser, and there's nothing like Hauser at night, right? You know, you play a night game at Hauser against a top opponent, and we're up there in the section, and we're going at it. And, you know, the last couple of seasons, man, the marching chiefs show up for big games.
Yeah.
Come on, man. Like, that's probably top five of my favorite moments of FSU baseball in my life is those games where the Chiefs show up and they're blaring, you know, like, and now, you know, last year was their second year doing it. And now they know kind of how to work with us because, you know, we've done things with them outside of baseball. You know, so it's starting to work hand in hand, and it's pretty cool to be a part of. But, you know, just seeing where this program's going with what we're putting into it and where we already are, you, like I said, sky's the limit, and you can't help but be excited about it.
Yeah, I think you bring up a good point. Like, the winning started before you had all the bells and whistles, right? And so I've heard it mentioned that, like, now, you know, your facilities are on the level of the teams that you're trying to compete with in Omaha, you know, the top tier programs of the country. So not only do you have a coaching staff who could produce the wins ahead of that, now you have that pulling it up too. But you also segue into the first section that I wanted to talk about perfectly, right? And that is the banner behind you, the Animals of Section B, the heart of the fan base, right? FSU, it's no secret, has some of the best fans in college baseball. They, like you mentioned, they absolutely bring Hauser to life. A night game with the Chiefs is second to none. Hauser gets to rocking when it's, you know, when it's packed up for a big game. And leading the way is the Animals, right? So for those that I'm pretty sure if you're an FSU baseball fan enough to watch this preview on YouTube, you've heard of the Animals of Section B. I'm guaranteed that. But for maybe those that don't know, like, tell me about the Animals of Section B. what FSU baseball just means to you guys, some of the traditions. Hopefully I can be honorary animal someday when I get down there to Tallahassee for a series or something. But man, just tell me about the animals of Section B and just what the relationship with the baseball team is. Because I tell you what, man, it's so awesome to see the energy in Hauser, the K-time chants, Oh Canada, all the things that go into that. And you guys do a wonderful job of creating one of the best atmospheres in college baseball.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm going into my third year now as an actual part of the Animals Section B, you know, but, and I kind of morphed into this real fast. I mean, I grew up going to baseball games with my mom, sitting down, you know, behind home plate. And as a kid, I would look up and, you know, hear the animals and watch them and their antics and everything. You know, I always kind of thought that was, I was like, man, that's kind of cool, you know, and I would always cheer with them down there, you know, as a kid. You know, 2 years ago, I went up for my first game as an animal. And now I've got my spot there on the pole where we put the magnetic case for strikeouts. And, I got to call my first K time and, got a strikeout and got to put my first K up on the pole. And I literally called my mom, like, Mom, I made it, you know, like,
I got chill bumps just hearing it, honestly. Right, like, just even hearing it out of me.
I still get them. You know, I grew up a kid that, surrounded by Florida State. My parents met the Marching Chiefs back in the 70s. And so I've been going to Florida State football games since I was 6 months old, like being carried up the ramp. So it was a big deal for all of us to get, you know, to carry our kids up the ramp. And same thing with Hauser. You know, every time I walk into Hauser, man, I get hyped up. I get chill bumps and I'm ready to go. And it's kind of funny because I'm able to kind of channel that. I don't want to call it nervous energy, but I'm kind of able to channel all that and my love for it into what we do with the animals. Right. So, you know, we've got, you know, certain guys on the team that we'll do certain cheers for right after they do their walk-up song. You know, Miles Bailey, he talked about it on a separate show the other day where he really loves the "he can hit for miles and miles" thing. And you know, a lot of people think that there's like, I've actually had people tell me, they're like, man, do you guys have like meetings or like training or like something like that to like to learn all this and do all this? I'm like, absolutely not. All of this happens so organically. We don't have a cheer for every single player, you know what I mean? Yeah. It's kind of one of those things, like we don't want to make it seem like it's a big deal to have it, but like, you know, they just kind of happen naturally, organically, and you know, you kind of earn it, and it just, you just kind of go with it. Last year, as a matter of fact, when we played at the Wahoo Stadium, was that Auburn we played last year? Somebody was like, "What's that kid's name?" And they were like, "Or how do you say his last name?" And somebody said, "Oh, it's Delamalor." And a guy back here goes, "Da da 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 da," and all of a sudden, now Delamalor is literally a Muppet song, right? So, yeah, and that's what I mean, is it just kind of happens that way. You know, going back to when Cam Smith was here, my youngest daughter, June, she stood up after the first pitch and just screamed, "Let's go, Cam." And then the entire section just busted out into that with claps. And literally next pitch, jacks one over the scoreboard. And that's another thing. Baseball, you're all about superstitions, right? If it works, Guess what? It sticks. So, and when Cam left and got drafted, everybody looked at June. They're like, "Who gets that now?" You know what I mean? And June's like, "Cal." So now is "Let's go, Cal" after the first pitch, you know, and it seems to work whenever Cal gets up there. And it's funny because, you know, kids are kids, and June, she'll take off and be going to get ice cream or chase a foul ball or whatever, and Cal will come up and somebody of Stan will go, "Where is June?" And if she's not there, somebody will, the best they can, these grown men will, and try to get this high pitched voice to sound like June and scream, "Let's go, Cal," across the whole stadium, you know. So, but it's, man, we have a good time up there. That's really where the energy comes from. We're all one big happy family. We tailgate before and a lot of times after every game. Those can get late, especially the big series. You know, but everybody looks after everybody, cares for everybody. We do things outside of season. We try to see each other as much as we can. Obviously, when baseball's here, everybody's around each other a whole lot more. But you know, as far as those cheers go and things like that, a lot of that stuff happens organically, and I think that's what makes it better. You know, it's not something that's drilled and rehearsed and this, that, and the other. And it's not always going to be the same person who starts, you know, the lawnmower's cheer or Cal's cheer or, you know, whoever. It's just whoever pipes up right then and there, you know. And that, like I said, I think that's what makes it that much better, is because it just kind of happens naturally. There's nothing forced about it. It's not drilled or rehearsed. And I think, you know, the guys feed off of that just because we're there. You know, we tell them all the time, we're going to be there to support you, whether you're 11 for 12 or 2 for 12. We don't care.
Yeah.
You know, and you don't necessarily get that in every sport on campus. If you're struggling, not everybody's going to be there to support you all the time, but it's different. Yeah. It's different with baseball. It's just different.
Yeah, and I love to hear that, the spontaneity of it, the authenticity of it. I think that's the big thing. And like you said, the program itself, the players, the coaches, they feed into it because they love it. You know, they love the support. They love what you guys do. And so, I mean, I love to hear that. And it's one of those where I love when y'all get after some of the opposing pitchers and things like that. I mean, it makes it fun, right? Like, you know, it's funny. Everyone, I know a lot of people associate Florida State with football and stuff like that. But, you know, you watch baseball and you watch golly, you think baseball's bad. You watch softball. Them girls be jaw-jacking worse than anybody. Yeah. So it makes it fun. And to me, that's what makes college baseball so much fun. Like, if you love the game of baseball, you probably have a pro team. But it's a little more sterile in that environment, right? And so college is where you can have fun with it. And the team feeds off of it. You see it on the field. You see the way they feed into the energy that you guys bring in. So I love that. But man, let's transition into talking about this baseball team that we got coming up for 2026. Obviously, there's a ton of changes, right? The draft impact is real. It's great for recruiting. It causes a lot of holes to fill. And so this is one of those years where I think they've done a really great job of filling the holes. 23 new players on a roster of 39, I think, if that's correct. You got a mix of some young talent and some veterans from the portal. And the thing is, like, it does create some uncertainty, right? But you also did a really good job. It's crazy how the thing with this baseball program is, you were rated by the draft a year ago, and it was like, well, how are we going to recover from that? And they did. And then you get rated by the draft again this year, and then they go out and sign a top five, I believe, transfer class and a good high school class. And so, like, they've been able to fill those holes successfully and then develop the players that they got. And so it's almost like, you hate to lose them, but you don't really sweat it like you would maybe the football program or something like that. And I'll throw it to you on this. We're talking about the changes for 2026, you know, and we're going to get into the pitching staff and the defense and the offense, and we're going to look at the schedule coming up here in a minute. But when we were talking about doing this preview, you know, you had said the one word that came to mind with this team was deep. And you know, I've listened to Link Jarrett and I've listened to Michael Posey, and it really sounded like that was the one thing they wanted to address the most this year, was just creating that depth. Because, you know, as everybody knows, baseball is a game of staying healthy and getting hot at the right time. And that injury bug, man, it gets anybody at any given time. And I know that Link said, you know, that's something I've worried about when I got here. That's something I'll worry about 5 years from now, is the health of the team and staying healthy over the season. So you can never have enough depth, especially in the bullpen. But, man, just expand on what you mean by when you say the one word that comes to your mind with this team is deep.
Well, so before we get into deep, I want to go back. You were talking about, you know, the previous years and so on and so forth. And, you know, when we left that year of Tibbs and Cam and those guys, you know, we went into last year, and my kind of assumption for our team, I thought we were going to kind of have to transition away from that long ball power hitting team. I really thought I saw a team that was going to be super fast, super athletic, a team that's going to need to get up there and hit a base hit and go station to station to station to station. And, you know, kind of a little bit we did that. We had a lot of times where bases were loaded, and the year before that, you got them bases loaded and you got somebody like Tibbs and, you know, and Cam Smith coming up behind you. You're going to have to do some damage, right? So, but like you said, injuries kind of got us a little bit last year, had to do some changes up to the lineup. But moving forward into this year, you know, you're looking at what our defense could be. And I always start with defense, right? Because those guys got to go out there on the field and play. Then they'll come in the dugout and bat. Like, let's, to me, I'm more worried about the defensive aspect, which is funny because when it comes to football, I call plays. I'm an offensive guy.
Yeah.
Right. But when it comes to baseball, I want to know what we're putting out there as a product as far as defense goes, and then tell me what they can do with the bat.
Mm-hmm.
To me, yes, baseball is, and hitting a baseball is literally the hardest thing you can do. It's super difficult. But looking at the roster, there's so many guys that can fill in to so many different places all the way through the infield and even into the outfield. Link's even talked about it. We're taking this guy, sticking him out there in the outfield, taking this guy, sticking him in the outfield, because he can do all of that. And that goes back to just getting such good athletes. You know, somebody like Noah Sheffield that can drop down and go play second and then go play left field or center field or right field, you know. And that's just one name, right? But when I write these names down in my diamond pattern, and I know that this guy can move here and this guy can move here, and then there's another guy underneath him, even if I move him in every one of those positions, it's like, I don't know if I've necessarily seen that depth in the last 2 years. There's guys that have been down there. Don't get me wrong. There's been some great ball players that are, you know, I don't want to mean to say it like this, but that are in the dugout every game because they're not in that starting nine. But I don't necessarily know if we've had this many jammed into the dugout that literally could be like, we've got a starting nine. We've got another six that could start another starting nine, you know,
yeah.
Because they're that good. So that's kind of what I mean by depth. And, you know, I feel the same way, honestly, about the pitching. You know, I think our pitching has got a lot of depth this year. And, you know, not to say we haven't had depth in the pitching in previous years. And, like, you know, the injury thing kind of gets us there every now and then. But I really think that there is so much there's talent there, but I think there's so much history with these guys. Like, they got so much experience.
Mm-hmm.
That depth is scary, right? When you're like, all right, well, these three guys are going to be our starters on Friday, Saturday, Sunday. This guy's going to be our Tuesday starter. Hey, guess what? These eight guys behind them that are going to come out of the pen, they really could start. You know what I mean? Or maybe they're not starters. They're 2 to 3 inning guys. But those 2 to 3 innings, guess what? They've been doing that for 2-3 years in the college level already. So now they've got so much experience coming into that. Their nerves will be calm. You know what I mean? Like, that's that experience that I'm looking at, that veteran roster that I'm looking at is impressive. And I'm
excited. I'm excited about it. February 13th.
Yeah, you know, it feels like it's always what you say. It's a good problem to have when the hardest problem you have is figuring out how you can get all the talent on the field to get them an opportunity to display that talent. It's a good problem to have.
It's not like football, you know what I mean, where you can have, dude, if you're lucky in a football team, you can have 5 wide receiver ones, right? Well, guess what? With that, you can say, all right, well, we can either run nobody in the backfield and put all these receivers out there at once. Or guess what? This guy's going to run 2 plays. I'm going to pull him off because he's tired. I'm going to throw these other 2 guys out there that are just as good. Try to stop that. This, you know, baseball is not something where you're just like, all right, man, you're going to go play for 2 innings. Then we'll put this guy out. That stuff happened back from Cub League. You know what I mean? You don't do that anymore. And that, like you say, it's a good problem to have. I can understand from Lake's point of view that it's probably a stressful problem to have.
Mm-hmm.
You obviously want to put the best product on the field, not only for your success, for the fans. You know what I mean? You want to have great success out there on the field for the fans, so they'll be excited about it. But I think I can speak for pretty much every Florida State baseball fan. If Limp Jarrett puts it out there on the field, I agree.
Yeah. You learn to trust the staff, right? Because, you know, I always say, like, with football, it's a results-based business, and the results matter. And when you look at what Lynx does, the history shows you have no reason not to trust what he puts out there, right? And so I love to hear that. And I, you know, they always talk a lot about in the off season, they don't really define roles because they just want a lot of cross training because they want people to be interchangeable like that. And so it's great, man. And we'll start with the pitching staff, matter of fact, because like you said, that's the one place everybody's really likes to know about is the pitching staff every year. That's always the hot topic, especially with the bullpen. You know, it gets criticized sometimes here, but I think they're probably in the best position they've been so far, and we'll get into that. Really quick, I want to bring you guys a quick word from today's sponsor, and that is Alumni Hall FSU. Look, they got baseball gear, Noles gear. My Sunday gold shirt that I got on right now came straight from Alumni Hall. So if you want to check those guys out, 1415 Timberlane Road in Tallahassee is the location. If you're going to be in at Hauser for that game, the JMU series, stop by, grab you some baseball gear, save 10%. With Coach Spear, you can also use that online. So we appreciate them supporting us and you guys supporting them. So, Gary, let's get into this pitching staff outlook, right? You lost a lot of arms, right? Obviously, Jamie Arnold's out, which leaves big shoes to fill. But they did a really good job of reloading the roster. They brought in 13 new arms. They knew you had two weekend starters to replace. There was obviously Vellini leaving as well. But they also needed to add bullpen depth. They wanted more diverse looks, and they wanted experience, is what Mike Posey talked about in some interviews I listened to. And he said that he feels they were able to do a good job of that with the pieces that they brought in. They brought in some different looks. They added a lot of depth. But it wasn't just depth. It's experience depth that's done it at a high level. You got guys who have, you know, over 100 ACC starts that we'll talk about in a little bit. Of course, as we know, we talked about, hinted at earlier, the key is, of course, going to be staying healthy over the course of the season. You know, just to, I don't, they maybe not a huge part of the plans, but as, you know, get out of the way here. Freshman Braxton Varnes and Jacob Marlow are already out for the year. So you did lose two arms there. But again, you got most of your good guys in there. And really what I'm excited to see as well is the development and the continued elevation of the pitching staff with the new pitching lab. I mean, just listen to them talk about this stuff and the motion capture analysis, and they know how the body works, and they can work on, you know, your hips and your feet and being a degree or two off here. It's just, the level that it's going to help is going to be amazing. I also like the way Link, from what they talk about, is how, you know, he doesn't just always throw you out there with no one on and no outs. Like, he'll put a runner on first and third with two outs, because he's like, man, anybody can get up there in a clean situation, in a clean inning, and feel confident in themselves. But what are you going to do under pressure, right? And so I love the way he does that. You got to know how they react in these tough moments. And so as we get into the pitching staff, man, I just love the way that they treat it, the way they kind of battle test these guys before you even get into the season a little bit, as best you can, obviously, in a practice situation. But I mean, it lets you know that these guys, when they hit the mound, they should be ready to go. And a lot of the resources that they put into the pitching lab and stuff is only going to help them get better. So, man, let's start. You can give some thoughts on that. Here, but man, it sounds like, let's go ahead and jump on maybe what we project to be the weekend starters. That's obviously what everybody's going to be looking at. I don't know how it's going to shake out. You may be able to expand on this more as far as who's going to be Friday, Saturday, Sunday. We probably won't find that out until the season gets here, but obviously I think, you know, Wes Mendez is probably going to be a penciled in weekend starter in one of those days. And it does sound like from what I've heard, Wes had a really good offseason, and they just talked about, a lot of it was just maturing, right? Just getting that level of maturity up, cleaning up some of the pitches. You know, he had a 5.42 ERA last year, 78 innings with 90 strikeouts and only a 240 opponent average. So that's probably going to be one of your weekend starters there. Trey Beard, left-handed pitcher, junior from Florida Atlantic transfer, number one pitcher in the portal per D1 baseball. Saw lots of physical growth in the weight room this offseason is what they talked about. You know, this is a guy that had a 3.14 ERA last year, 86 innings, 118 strikeouts, and a 199 opponent average with a 7-1 record. And then the other name that I've heard, and I'll throw it back to you on this, is Bryson Moore is competing for that third, that kind of weekend spot there. Junior right-hander pitcher transferred in from Virginia. Four-pitch mix, has exceeded expectations so far. Micah talked about Link has a grading metrics that he does in the fall, and Bryson Moore was actually number one in those grading metrics, 3.44 ERA, an 18.1 inning pitch last year at UVA, 21 strikeouts, only 8 walks. But he had a 1.3 ERA in 2024 with 13 innings pitched. So, man, whichever way you slice it, whoever's Friday, Saturday, or Sunday, I think you got, you know, maybe you don't have a Jamie Arnold out there, right? But I think you have more consistency across the weekend of having high-level arms that can come at you Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Yeah, with those three names, you know, you could you could put them on darks and just close your eyes and throw them at the wall, and whatever whatever day they land on, I'm all right. Sounds good. I talk to these guys on a personal level, you know, every now and then, and you know, I asked Wes the other day. I was like, "What is it, man? What day you on?" He's like, "Man, I'm on Friday." You know, and that's what I want to hear, though. You know, I want to hear. I don't want to hear him say, you know, I'm good Sunday. I'm good on Sunday. You know what I mean? Like that's my wheelhouse. No, I want to hear a guy say he wants to be the dude, right?
Yeah.
So, and especially when the dude that left was Jamie Arnold. Like, come on, man. You know, like,
yeah. Yeah, they were serious to fail, man.
Like, guy's pretty good at throwing a baseball over a plate, right? So,
yeah.
But all three of those guys that you named right there, you know, they all have what? One really big thing in common? We all in agreement there?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, the amount of knowledge that these guys have and like you said, battle testedness, they've all been there, done that, right? So, I don't know. As far as those three names go, you can't go wrong with whatever day you put them on. I feel like they've all kind of separated themselves in that aspect as far as who's gonna be in those positions for Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Tuesday I got wide open. You know, we can skip right on by those Friday, Saturday, Sunday things, man, because I think everybody's pretty much in agreement that those three names are probably gonna be locked in there. As for what day it goes, you know, your guess is as good as mine. And you know, I'll check it off as a plus one for me just for feeling like those three names are solid. Other than that, I couldn't tell you as far as the day goes. But Tuesday is a day for me that Tuesday, Wednesday, right? Because we got a couple of Wednesday games as well. Those are the games that's the spot that I'm still, I don't really know. You know, yeah. do you give that to somebody like Manca? Do you give that, you know, who's another lefty? Do you give that to somebody like Abraham, who's, you know, who's really kind of grown? You know, he had some growing pains and stuff like that. You know, some innings, you know, admittedly kind of got away from him there. You know what I mean? And just some tough spots. And then, you know, you got Gabe Nard coming in, talk about battle tested and having some stuff with his battle testedness. Dude's pretty darn good too at throwing a baseball over mm-hmm. blood, right? And then, you know, something me and my wife actually talked about a little bit this afternoon. Another guy that really came on, and you and I spoke about this a little bit off before we got started. Man, Chris Kinnear really pitched some big innings for us towards the end of the year. And, you know, I haven't heard a whole lot about how his offseason has gone, admittedly, but, you know, just knowing where he was at the beginning of the year and certain situations where kind of like Abraham, you know, felt like things maybe just got away from him. And you're like, man, just one more pitch. And you feel like mentally he'd click back in and he'd be able to lock back in and deal. But sometimes just felt like it just got a little bit too far away. And it was a lot of times in situations where Link's like, I got to do something now. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure it probably kills Link because some of those situations he would love to sit there and let those guys, like you said, battle it out. Like we go through this at practice, we try to practice these scenarios, but nothing is the same as having that other team in that dugout chirping at you. You know what I mean? And us up there trying to rally you, and just so many things just trying to work for you, but seem to be working against you. And Link's like, it's better. Let me just get you out right now. Let me throw somebody else in there. Let's not cause any bad habits because we're trying to overthrow. We're trying to do things or whatever. But you know, those are a couple of names that I look at that could be, you know, to me could be Tuesday starters. But going, you know, you go down the rest of the list of the guys in the pen. We go back to the depth thing that we talked about with the defense. Everybody that we brought in, man, got some serious, you know, understanding of the game of baseball and have been in pressure situations. So, you know, we get into a situation where it's like, man, we really got to get this guy out. There's a guy out there. We got to get this guy out. I feel like, you know, Mike is going to say, this is the guy. You know what I mean? And we got a guy down there that can do that. It'll be interesting to see who's got longevity. I know that's something that Link's kind of been talking about, is building up that pitch count. We got to see who can go four innings. You know what I mean? If we had to get you out there, for every one of these arms, and it's the story of baseball. The longer your starting arm can go, the better your bullpen benefits, right? Because it's less guys you got to pull, especially throughout a weekend series. You're going to want to have to trot somebody out there on Friday, because you had to get to them super, super early. And then the next thing you know, you got to trot them back out there Saturday, and God forbid, trot them back out there Sunday. You don't want to end up in situations like that. So, your starters on Friday, Saturday, Sunday, they've really got to be able to get you, at least I'd say out of the fifth, maybe into the sixth would be great. I mean, we were pretty blessed to see some guys last year pitching complete games. Lelini, I mean, geez, you know what I mean? Like, that dude was a tank.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you felt confident with those guys going triple digits in just about every game. And like you said, it's just building up that workload. And there is something to, like you talked about with Kinnear and Johnny A, where it's like, you saw the flashes. It's just doing it consistently. And it's a tough decision, like you said, with Link and Micah, where you want to let them work through it, but you also don't want to let them drown if they're out there swimming against the current. And you also have to keep in mind the game, the wins, and all that stuff matters too. So you have to keep your big picture stuff too. But, again, those are guys who you saw the flashes, and now it's just doing that consistently. And there's some other names that I want to talk about real quick in the bullpen or in the pitching staff, however it shakes out, that I'm really hearing good stuff about. And the first one is junior right-handed pitcher Cole Stokes, who comes over from Oregon. Has really good stuff. Posey said it's some of the best he's ever coached, and he's coaching pretty darn good arms. Said they're really just kind of honing in the command right now, just a little bit raw at the moment. He had 20.1 innings there at Oregon last year, 3.10 ERA, only allowed a 130 batting average against him. Had a few extra walks there, but man, I mean, that's a guy who could be somebody for you. Peyton Manca had a good summer, from what I've heard, said he took a big jump last year, looking to make another big jump this year. You bring in right-handed pitcher Cade O'Leary from Mississippi State, who's, they say, he's got a pretty darn good five-pitch mix there. And then the one that you talked about that I really like is right-handed pitcher senior Gabe Nard from Duke. This guy's got over 100 ACC appearances. I mean, from what they're saying, this can be the guy that can serve in a long relief or a short outing, whatever you need him to do. He threw 50 innings last year, right? 4.62 ERA, 45 Ks, only 17 walks. I mean, that's a guy that's a blessing to have in the dugout. If you got a guy or in the bullpen, if you need him to come in, of course, you got junior right-handed pitcher Brody Purcell that comes over from USC as well. Threw 42 innings for the Trojans last year, 2.11 ERA, 51 strikeouts, 177 batting average against. You just got all these veteran guys that are coming in to this pitching staff that can really put in some work for you. And I think the thing is the way I feel, and I correct me if I'm wrong on this, but it feels like, I would love to see Wes be the Friday starter because he's an emotional guy. He feeds into that. We saw that last year, and I think he'd be great on Friday night. Maybe you don't have the upper tier star power in your starting three weekend. I mean, they're really good, right? But it's hard to be better than Jamie Arnold. But your bullpen depth is just so much better with what you have in there from an experience side of things that you can kind of cover that up a little bit, right? And there's some freshmen like Manny Lantigua that I've heard is a name to watch too. So there's a wealth of guys. And I agree with you. Right now, the midweek starter is the one that I really can't put my finger on. But I feel really good about all three weekend starters. And I feel really good about some of these experienced guys coming out of the bullpen that can step into a big moment for you, and it's just not too big for them. And so you got a handful of guys. So, man, throw some names at me, throw some thoughts on the guys that we talked about and just what that bullpen is going to look like this year.
Whoever you use as your Tuesday starter, obviously, you're not going to see him as a bullpen guy necessarily on the weekend. Right. So that's kind of tough as far as who do you give that to? Another guy that I really like, is Cooper Whited. I haven't heard a whole lot about how things are going with him. Going back and looking, I know he didn't have as many starts his freshman year. I think he had seven starts. I think he went 6-1. And then I think I saw where last year he ended up going like 5-5. but he's a guy that I'm interested to kind of see what he can do coming out of the pen for us. You had mentioned Nard, obviously. He's another guy. He didn't pitch for us. So for a lot of people, the you know, you love your guys, right? They're obviously
right.
All our guys. Don't get me wrong. Like, I'm going to love on all these guys the same. But you go back to the guys that did stuff here for you last year, and it's like, okay, you got Micah, you got Abraham, you got Chris Kinnear, and immediately you're like, obviously those aren't going to be your Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Then they got to be your Tuesday guy. Well, you know, Gabe Nard's no slouch. You know what I mean? Like, Gabe, that's it. You brought
Duke's a pretty good program.
Yeah, you brought that guy here for a good reason. You know what I mean? And you know, I don't want people to sleep on him by any means. As far as coming in, Stokes, you know, I think that's another guy that, you know, when you mentioned about him, I think if you get a day, remember that guy I was talking about? If there's a guy on third, you really got to get that out, and you really just need to blow some balls by a guy.
Mm-hmm.
I think Stokes could be that guy. He just come in there,
yeah.
You know, especially if the guy's on second and on third, you get him up there, he'd be like, strike this guy out. You know, you go back to that, from what movie was that? Major League, strike that out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
that's kind of that guy in that situation where you're like, go on up there and just handle this situation for it.
Yeah, you know? Just give me one.
Yeah, then we'll go from there. You know what I mean? As long as the stuff is good, we might trot you back out there for another three, see how things go. But, you know, that's situational baseball, right? And I think Link is probably one of the best coaches that I've seen in situational baseball as far as putting the guy out there in the right moment. Does it always pan out? No, but you know, it's not machines and computers. You know, there's real live things happening out there. There's mental stuff, there's physical stuff. So that's kind of difficult. Somebody I was really hoping, you know, to be able to see come out of the pen somewhere in those later times was Braxton Varnes. Him not being able to pitch this year kind of stinks, but you know, obviously hopefully he's able to rehab and recover and kind of see where things go for him. You mentioned Brody Purcell. Kid's not bad at throwing a baseball over a plate either. You see my point. Going back to the very beginning of the show, deep. You know what I mean? Like, there is just so much experience in every single, like, and when I say the experience, right, I say deep with the defensive part because there's just so many dudes that could play anywhere and fill in anywhere, right? Then you go to the bullpen and then the pitching, and the deep is a different deep. It's a experienced deep. And you're like, man, all these guys have pitched a lot of innings. All these guys have got, you know, they've got super good ERAs where they're coming from. You know, it's obviously this is a different animal. Playing here is a little bit different animal. But I tend to think being here brings out the best in people, not the opposite. Right. So, seeing where some of these guys are going to wind up and what they're going to do, and I don't know any other way to say it other than what we talked about at the beginning. This depth is going to be unreal. I think this pitching, you know, like you said, obviously we don't have the star power with, you know, Jamie Arnold, which I love Jamie to death, you know, and Vellini being gone, that dude was probably my most consistent, obviously besides Jamie Arnold, his situation, but the consistency that Vellini had on the mound and the longevity that Vellini brought to the mound is, to me, I feel like you're going to miss that just as much as Jamie Arnold. You know what I mean? So I don't want anybody to forget his name because of the star power that Jamie Arnold brought in that situation. Because in my eyes, Vellini did just as much for us on the mound as what Jamie did. And so he's a guy that I'm going to continuously bring up, you know, as the years progress, because he's a name I don't want to get, you know, forgotten about, but he's going to be somebody that you're going to miss this year. And I think Wes can step up and do the Friday. Like you said, with his energy and the way that he, you know, feeds off of that, and he kind of get the team riled up and so on and so forth. And I'm hoping going into this year, you know, the maturity aspect that we talked about, that's going to kind of come along a little bit more as well. But this, you know, going back to what we talked about at the very beginning, this depth of this team, the experience of this team, I think people in that are showing up to Hauser and watching on TV, they're going to have a little bit different things to say this year as far as when we got to go to the pen and who comes out and what they're able to do. Think we're all going to be pleasantly surprised and excited about what we get.
Yeah, I mean, I think you had a couple guys in the last few years that you felt good about, but sometimes you just held your breath, right? And I feel like this year it's going to be totally different because, you know, you've got a handful of guys that probably could start at a handful of programs around the country, and they're coming here to come out of the bullpen, and it's just you can't replace that type of experience. Like you said, I know people would be like, well, they didn't come from us. Duke's a pretty darn good baseball program that plays in a pretty good conference. I mean,
let's remember the ACC tournament the last couple of years. Yeah,
exactly. Exactly. It's a wealth of arms that you have in there. So I'm really excited to see the bullpen because really it has always kind of felt like, at least the last 2 years, that was kind of your Achilles heel. And so if you could just fix that, man, you'd be in a great place. So let's actually transition to the rest of the defense. Now we'll start with the outfield. Feels like maybe these could be interchangeable as well, but it also feels like you got some guys you feel really good about there. The first thing I'll say is listen to Link's interview. The one thing that he did convey more than anything was he likes the athleticism in the outfield. Mm-hmm. And you got a handful of it, right? Sounds like from what I'm reading and hearing, it sounds like it's probably going to be a combination of Chase Williams, Braden Dowd, and Dallon Allere out there in the outfield. Dowd plays center at USC, but that's where Chase's athleticism could probably shine the most, right? Dallon Allere played mostly left field last year, but right field in the fall. It goes back to the depth and the cross-training that we talked about to where you can move these pieces around, right? And, of course, don't sleep on Noah Sheffield. Another name that you're hearing is John Stetzer, as well as a couple other names that could be adding depth to that, if not push for a starting spot. So, I mean, however it shakes out, Link likes the athleticism in the outfield, and it feels like you got, at a minimum, five or six guys who could start out there for you. And so that's big in itself, right, to be able to have that depth in the outfield as well and the athleticism that Link's always looking for in that outfield.
Yeah, I think you hit it right there on five or six. I've got five guys written down that I see as far as our true outfield goes right now. I mean, obviously, Chase Williams, that dude's made some plays in the outfield last year that you just, you know, take your hat off and kind of scratch your head at. Like, how in the world, you know, did this guy make this play? And then come up firing, you know what I mean? Like, and then you see the injury and you're like, oh, man, you know, please come back from that. And he did, you know, obviously went from being a switch hitter to just hitting from one side. And now he's starting to transition, switching back to both. And that hopefully that'll continue to progress as the season goes on. And, you know, that's another threat for him as far as being at the plate, being able to switch hit. I think Dallon Allere is another guy. I mean, how do you know, that guy pretty much proved himself last year, with his abilities out there on the field. You know, I was really, really hoping that we would get Gage back this year. But, you know, in this era of the draft where you don't have, you know, a million rounds, when your name gets called, you know, you're going to really probably take that chance. You know what I mean? It's just you dream as a kid, you get your name called in the draft. And now in the shortened draft, it's like, yeah, my name got called. I'm going to head out. But you know, I feel like with him here on this team, you're obviously set, right? I think you're probably correct with Dowd. I think with Dowd's age and everything, I think I'd probably see him more over right field just to kind of keep him, I don't want to say away from people, right? That sounds kind of weird because he's out there, yeah. But, you know, over there by his guys, you know what I mean? And, you know, just kind of let everybody settle where they've been, you know what I mean? Leave Dallon Allere where he's been, where he finished up at. Let's let Chase go down there and run some balls down center and throw Dowd out there. But I don't know necessarily. I think those will probably be your starting three. Like you said, I think Noah's a guy that can come in and do things out there just because of his pure athletic ability. Like, let's all be honest, right? So playing the outfield is not any easier of a position, right, than, say, second or short. All right. It's all about now you're just reading the ball differently. You got a little bit longer to react. But when a guy hits from the right hand side, right, and he's late on a ball, the ball is not just going to go, you know, opposite way. It's going to go the opposite way and tail, right? Yeah. So there's things that you have to learn how to read the ball off the bat. And if you've not been out there and dealt with it, it's a little bit of a learning curve. Case in point, Cam Smith, dude played third base last year, you know, for us. And then now he's playing right field for the Astros. You know what I mean? And that all really comes from the fact that he's just really good in the box with a bat in his hand. And it's like, we've got to figure out a way to put this guy off the field. All right, well, we'll put him out there in the outfield where we got a hole and we didn't just spend a bajillion dollars to put this guy over here on third. Right?
Yeah.
And we're going to stick him out there and we're going to teach him. And Cam even talked about that in one of his interviews about the transition. He's like, you know, reading the ball off the bat, it does different things, you know. And, you know, if you got a left-handed guy and he gets to it early, you know, yes, that ball is coming your way, but guess what? It's also tailing towards center. So I did like the fact of hearing Coach Jarrett saying he was putting those guys in every one of those positions and having them take balls off of right-handed batters, left-handed batters, you know, being able to communicate. So each one of those guys has played center, has played left, has played right, and they all understand, this was right out of his mouth, Coach Jarrett's mouth, they all understand the guy playing center got first dibs, right? So, you know, if he thinks that's his ball, he's calling you off, that's his ball, you know what I mean? But they've all rotated around. And they understand that, and they feed from that. You know, a lot of people have been saying, when are we going to get a starting lineup? You've got to get these guys out there so that they can mesh. Well, guess what? These guys are meshing because he's putting them in all these different places and making them all understand whoever's in this position, that's who's running things out here. It all kind of channels through center. And no matter who's been there, from what I understand, it's really looked good. But I think going to who those starters are be, I think you're going to see Brody. I think you'll see Chase, and really good chance that you're going to see Dowd. You know, we'll have to kind of see what happens with Dowd as far as, you know, the hitting goes. Obviously I know the guy can put the bat on the ball. But he's new to me, you know what I mean? He's new to the program for us. So it'll be interesting to see, but again, it all boils down to the guy with the clipboard in his hand, he's whatever he puts out there, I'll say, let's go. I agree. Yes, sir.
Yeah, 1,000%. And I think you bring up a good point. Like in high school, I played offensive line and it helped to know as like a tackle, you played guard, as someone who played center, like to know the other guy's job next to you, but maybe doing a different job at the time. Like if you know how to play left, right, or center, it just helps you understand how the whole big picture works from a standpoint of working together, right? Because you've got to work together in the outfield to cover the ground and to chase things down. And so, I mean, I'm excited to see the athleticism. You know, anytime you think of Chase Williams, obviously you think of the infamous photo of the old dude in the scoreboard that's just like watching the play. And so you're excited to see the athleticism that they have out there. But let's bring it to the infield here. And I think this is where you have some certainties and some uncertainties, right? I mean, obviously, we're talking about replacing Jamie Arnold, right?
Probably only got one certainty, to be honest with you. Yes, unless you're going to go with the catcher too. But yeah, we'll go there.
Yeah, I mean, like we talk about replacing Jamie Arnold. You got to replace two of the best middle infielders in the country in Lodis and Ferreau, and so that's going to be tough, right? But they do talk again about a lot of cross training on the infield, maybe outside of first base, which is where we'll start because that feels like the most certain, right? It's got to be Miles Bailey going to hold down that spot, right? He held it down last year. He did really good. His size gives him good radius. He's got, I mean, you've got to have that bat in the lineup somewhere. You just can't not have him in the lineup. So you feel really good about him being at first base. I know he worked a little bit in the outfield just in case you needed to cross train him a little bit. But, you know, first base, it feels like Miles Bailey right now for a lock for sure. From what I've heard, if you were to miss time, you got Eli Putnam who could slide around to first maybe, but this is a guy that played first, second, shortstop, and I think third where he came from. So he's a Swiss Army knife for you there. But first base feels like Miles Bailey's to hold down. Third base, obviously, you could put Cal there, right? He was there for you last year, started 52 games. He did come to Florida State as a middle infielder, so if you like him better somewhere else, you can certainly put him somewhere else. But I do like the thought of Cal being there as just a steady presence on the hot corner. I think I like him there. Eli Putnam could also go to third if he needed to, like we talked about. Will Bravaro is another freshman there that could factor in. But let's start with, you know, unless maybe you have a different thought on that, I think first is probably going to be Miles and third will probably be Cal. Give me your thoughts on them, and then we'll kind of talk about a little bit more of the uncertainty of the middle infield.
Yeah, I mean, first base is, you know, that's you're not going to take Miles off of first base. The fact that the guy started there, you know, as a freshman and exceeded expectations, I think, as far as what he was able to do there. You know, and then obviously you transitioned to his bat from there. Like you said, you got to have that bat in the lineup. I don't care where you put it. Real fast, while we talk about that bat in the lineup, I was really excited. You know, the DH position is always that's another, you know, you got to think about that too, as well as you fill this out. And I really thought, you know, going into this year, after last year, you know, you had Hankerson, dude hits moonshots, right? I mean, just basketballs. And I was like, man, there's going to be a position. Hankerson also plays first, but if you're going to leave Miles at first, guess what? I'll take Hankerson in a permanent DH. And he, you know, when it came time for guys to, you know, hit portal or do whatever they were going to do at that particular time, we also had Bladen playing, who is just a yoked dude, right? I mean, the guy's solid, who was hurt last year, was coming into this year, and I thought that was going to be our DH. And I'm pretty sure that Hankerson probably saw the same thing. So he was like, hey, look, I understand, see what this is. I'm going to go ahead and, you know, and transfer out. And then I think it was only 2 or 3 weeks after that it came out that Bladen was still, he wasn't going to be able to recover from his back. And, you know, so we ended up losing him and Hankerson in like a 3 week period. And I'm like, oh man, to be able to have some hindsight, you know, or some foresight into the future to know that Bladen's going to be gone and then Hankerson stay, you know, to have him and Miles Bailey in the same lineup. Good God. Yeah, that was like on a consistent basis. Like, I know we threw Hankerson out there in some situations, you know what I mean, down the stretch and things like that. But good Lord, on a consistent basis, you're going to put Miles and Hankerson on the same lineup? That would have been scary. Either even Bladen playing and Miles in the same lineup would have been, you know, nuts. But yeah, I think you're locked down at first with Miles. I don't think there's any reason to change that. Me personally, I know Cal plays short when he goes to the Northwoods League and when he went to the Cape. I really like Cal over there at third. I think he really settled in over there. You know, a lot of these guys, they also have preferences too, right? Cal may just be like, I really don't want to play third anymore. I really want to go short. Obviously, he's going to say, I'll do whatever I got to do for the team, right? Which is the first thing you want to hear a guy say. But I think I'd like to leave Cal where he's at. That leaves you, in my mind, that leaves two spots, right? You got short and second. And you got three names. You know, the fourth name I'll put out there is Jace Estes, who, you know, Link has spoken very highly of him this offseason and heading into opening day. I don't know quite yet if Jace is able to jump these three guys to take one of those two positions yet. I do think we can see him being rotated in, you know, as games go on and so forth. Like, you know, especially I will tell you this, if it's in a situation where we really need a good bunt, Link has expressed that Jace really thrives at that and has done really well with that. So, and that's just another aspect of the game that a lot of people have kind of gotten away from the bunt. You know, it's all just let's put the bat on the ball and hit it. And I know that was a lot of 11's deal. You know, it was like, we're going to bunt, we're going to get guys around, we're going to get on base and so on and so forth. But I really think Gabe Frazier, Eli Putnam, and Carter McCulley, those three are really vying for those last two positions. And to be fair, it's kind of like the three Friday, Saturday, Sunday pitching situation. I don't know who you put in what position and who you tell, hey, bud, you know what I mean? Like, I just don't know. And I don't know if your way to fix that is, say, which one of the three, right, isn't quite the same as the other two when it comes to the positions and the defense, but still has a good bat, and you make him your DH. You know what I mean? So that's a whole nother can of worms, and it's something we can speculate on till we're blue in the face. But until Lindgren tells us who that's going to be, now I can tell you, I've got a little bit of personal, right? And then, you know, as far as my baseball reasoning, I would like to see Carter McCullough play at shortstop. Personal, just because, you know, I've got a good connection with the kid, love the kid, love his family. So obviously, that obviously skews my judgment anyway, just because
right.
the way it is. But when I also look at it from a baseball standpoint, I know the kid can really hit, right? That's one aspect of it. The other aspect of it is we just watched the guy in Alex Lodique's big, long, you know, can cover here and there because of his length. Carter's kind of fitting that same build, right? He's able to make those long stretches and things like that. And, you know, he's comfortable there. You can't go wrong with putting him at second either. You know, with the uptick of left-handed guys, balls going that way. But shortstop's just kind of, it hasn't always, now you can obviously make the argument, you don't necessarily need a long, tall guy at shortstop, right? Derek Jeter was definitely not that, right? That's just, if you were to ask me if I could have a basketball team where everybody's 6'7", and they're y'all stud athletes, would you take it, or would you want one guy who's a little bit faster that's 5'10"? Well, give me the 6'7" lineup, please. Right. So stick me Carter McCullough at short. And then, you know, I think you got to probably go Eli Putnam at second. Just there's a little bit that kind of goes into that. You know, obviously, we're in a new era of baseball with how we get guys here. And that goes down to the money aspect as well, you know, as you know, not just what you're able to do, but, you know, we expect you to be able to do this. You're going to kind of have to go with the one that is also there financially. Right. You know, not saying that everybody, you know, I don't know who's getting what or whatever the case may be, but you know, you're paying to get some of these guys here. That's just the nature of the game now. But you know, and then we'll have to see what happens there with those two positions. But right now, in my mind, I think you're Cal third, Carter short, Putnam second, Miles first. And obviously, as long as he's able to recover and come along, which Link kind of went into a little bit, that he's kind of overplaying that being hurt thing. But I think Hunter Farms obviously has got to be your starter by the plug.
Yeah, and like you said, I mean, the reality of today's game is you want the return on investment if you paid financially to get somebody here. But I'm in total agreement with you. Just to add on to what you said, I had basically the Eli Putnam, Jace Estes in there, Gabe Frazier and Carter McCullough were the ones you're looking at. Obviously, you got Hunter Carnes behind the plate, which is who you wanted. Very talented guy, really came on last year. You'd like to see him get healthy and take that next step. Obviously, you got Nathan Smelly behind him too. There, so you do have a little bit of depth. It was, you know, important to bring him back as a veteran guy behind the plate just to give you that depth. It's a long season. It's hard on those knees. That's why I could never play catcher, because I just didn't have the knees for it. I just couldn't do it. But, you know, I think the overall aspect, just to go off of what you said, is the good thing is you feel like you got a couple of extra bodies if you need to interchange. If someone gets in a slump, if something happens, you've got a few options at some of these positions, right? And so it's good to have that depth and that cross-training ability to be able to move guys around and maximize that talent. And you already touched on DH there as well. Just real quick, obviously, you can see Noah Sheffield stepping into that if he doesn't hit the outfield. Eli Putnam is a guy, he's probably going to be starting in your field, so that may not happen. If the Lamalier doesn't get one of the outfield spots, that's another guy that's got a hot bat that you could see At the DH. And there's a couple other guys that fits, you know, Paulino Jr., Charlie Buckles. There are a couple of freshmen who can swing the stick, and those could be guys there. I mean, like you said before, man, you're just really trying to figure out a way to get your best defenders out there, but you also want to get your best bats in the lineup. So give me some thoughts on DH, and you know, we'll use that to transition into the offensive outlook.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I think you got to kind of give yourself the opportunity. Now, here's the other thing too, though, is if you give, say, you put Cal and Carter and Eli and Miles out there, and then you DH Frazier. Now, if you got to make a substitution for whatever reason, now you got to go down into the even further, right? Whereas if you DH with, like you said, maybe Noah Sheffield giving you a little bit more speed again. If he's not out there because you got DeLamalore Williams and Braden Dowd, maybe you DH somebody like Noah Sheffield, and that makes you have to sit Frazier, but that gives you the opportunity to, if we really need to get a spark with what we got going on, I can say Eli or Carter, it's just not, you know, we're struggling right now. We need a spark, whatever the case may be. And then you throw somebody like Gabe Frazier out there as a pinch hitter. You know, not saying that we don't have, like I said, we've definitely got the depth with that, but I don't know where that tail off is, right? I don't know where, and I don't want to call it a drop off. That's why I call it a tail off. I'm not really sure where the tail off there is outside of the pitching. Obviously, we really need to stay healthy, you know. You don't want to test that theory of deep, you know, more than you have. It's good to be able to say, and it's good to be able to, you know, to see it. But, you know, Shamela, he's another guy that you could see coming up and DHing, for sure. He made some pretty big hits for us last year. I don't think you'll see anything different, out of the starting nine. I think the bats are all still going to be pretty solid. But I don't know who you throw out there for DH. I like maybe Noah Sheffield, just because it gives you a little bit more athleticism on the bags. You know, not to say that Gabe Frazier might not be fast. I don't know. I haven't enough of it. But and you mentioned Charlie Buckles. You know, that kid, he's going to be a dude for us. It's kind of one of those situations where it's like you got Miles Bailey in front of you, you know, as a first baseman, you got Miles Bailey in front of you. I mean, the dude's, you know, Buttles is 6'6", you know what I mean? He's a lefty. So there's something to be said there for that too. But, you know, I can tell you, I have it on high authority that he was pretty much told, he's like, look, you're going to be a dude for us. You got Miles in front of you right this second. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just continue to grind and get better and learn the position and learn the program and what we're doing. And his time will come. But he could be another guy that, you know, if he's putting the bat to the ball well enough and Link sees it, throw him out there in the DH spot. Let him get some more, you know, get some more college reps. Let him get some at-bats. If it's not going to be him being on the bag, let him get up there and punish the ball. I know he can hit. Yeah, and we've seen the Instagram videos of him. I forget what company that is. He's doing, I think it was something for a bat company, where he was over there, and I mean, just demolishing baseballs. So let's be honest. There's some guys, you know, we talked about the pitchers. That guy can really throw it over the plate. Well, there's some guys over there that can hit it from over the plate on our team too. So I don't think we're hurting in that department. It's just kind of who's going to fill in those spots, you know. And basically what I'm kind of getting out of this, and I've gotten out of all the things that I've done talking about baseball, is, man, I would love to have Link Jarrett's position, but God, I would not want to be in his position.
Yeah. It's hard to be the guy to make that call, right? To make someone happy, you have to disappoint someone. You can't put 18 players on the field at one time, even though you might want to. But it's just the way it is. And then
deadline changes, like,
that would be awesome. Like, it would be cool to see, you know, but it's just not the way baseball works. And so that's just part of the game. And I do think early in the season with all the changes, you might see some shuffling, some testing. Let's see how this looks, and let's try this guy and see how this looks. And you got to dial it in. And I will say the one thing about the lineup is every year people, some people, you know, when you had Tibbs and Cam Smith, it's like you got power in the lineup. And then they leave and you're like, well, are we going to have that same power? And then Miles Bailey steps up. And so, like, you seem to find power in this line, a lot of pop in this lineup every year. And that leads us into the offense. And that's going to conclude part one of this two-part baseball preview series. Look, me and Gary were having such a great conversation, not leaving any stones unturned about this baseball team coming up for 2026 in this preview that we're doing, that we ended up going almost 2 hours, right? And so I thought it might be a little bit better to just break this into two parts, about an hour apiece. And so this is going to be part one, and I appreciate you guys watching. Part two, which is going to be coming out soon, so be on the lookout for that. We're going to go through the offense. We're also going to break down the schedule, talk about Aaron's Army, and just a whole lot more good conversation coming. So make sure you're on the lookout for that. But thank you so much for watching part one. I know that I enjoyed my conversation with Gary. I hope you guys enjoyed this too. Look, here at Plant the Spear, we're going to try and give the baseball team the coverage that they deserve, right? They have earned that for being one of the best sports programs here in Tallahassee. So, man, I really appreciate you guys watching. If you enjoyed this content, drop a like and subscribe, hit the notification bell, rate and review on the podcast so you can stay connected to us all season long. We're going to try, like I said, to cover baseball. Of course, we stay on top of football and things like that. So, again, guys, I really appreciate you watching, and be on the lookout for part two that will be dropping soon. Thank you, and go Noles.